This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Thank you for listening today. I hope you're having a good week. Thanks for listening to my podcast, for God's sakes. We've been around a while, and we could use all the support we can get, right, Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
You had a burp there kind of in your mouth?
Nope.
No? You're all right?
Huh?
Ryan and I are going to see a Bee Gees cover band tomorrow.
We are.
Tell me you care. Not you.
What, me? Oh.
No, is the it, audience.
Is that a song?
Look, if you like this interview, I ask you to subscribe, write a review. Helps the show a lot. And if you want to join Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, go to patreon.com/insideofyou. Become a patron. There's so many perks. You get packages from me and notes and Zoom. There's a, just take a look at it. If you want to support the show, it means a lot. It helps. Without my patrons, I couldn't do this show. And also, you can go to my Instagram at the Michael Rosenbaum and go to my Linktree, and you can see where me and Tom Welling are doing cons. We're now doing a Smallville con for the very first time in October in New Jersey. That will be fun. We'll do a Smallville Nights. Tom and I are also going to do a live podcast for the Talkville podcast in LA, hopefully in April or May. We're figuring out a date, but I'll let you know. But go to the Linktree in my Instagram at the Michael Rosenbaum. Go to Linktree for cameos and all that stuff, and links to the Inside of You online store if you want cool merch. I haven't plugged it in a while, but I have a new puppy product called Rosie's Puppy Fresh Breath. And if you want your dog to have fresh breath, then Rosie's Puppy Fresh Breath is for you. It's odorless, it's tasteless, and that's a plug. Gotta give a plug. I love it. It's on Amazon. Check it out and write a review if you like. That certainly helps. We need some reviews because on Amazon, there's so many. Tom Payne is the guest. We talk a lot about career and life and mental health and all that stuff. We talk about The Walking Dead. And I really enjoyed this conversation. And what's funny is, you look at him and he's just very unassuming. Is that the right word? Mm-hmm. Very just a regular guy. And he's English,
mm-hmm.
but you're so used to him speaking with an American accent.
And playing a big, dark character too.
Like, yeah.
He's just a guy in slacks.
As he's many just of us a are. Guy in slacks. That's all I am right now, is a guy in slacks. I hope you guys have a great week. And thank you for listening to this podcast. Let's just get into it. Let's get inside Tom Payne.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Thanks for coming here. You didn't get a speeding ticket on your way here, like the last guest.
No, I did not get a... How do you get a speeding ticket on the way here?
Well, you sped.
But you have to get... In America, you have to get caught by someone to get a speeding ticket.
Wait a minute. So are you saying in England, you tend to...
There's cameras everywhere.
There's cameras everywhere?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but, used to do that here, and now they don't do that
because
anymore.
Because it was against American rights or something. They had like red light cameras here and speed cameras, but they got rid of it all because... In America, you can say that's against my rights and they get taken away.
Wow. But in England?
In England, government rule.
Yeah. I didn't know that they still do that in England. Do people fight it? Do they get upset about it?
No, because they have it on video as well. So they're like, this is you going 5 miles over this. You can't deny it. But that was always wild to me when I moved to America. It's like, you get on the freeway here. No one's driving the speed limit. No one's using their turn signals. Everyone's doing crazy shit. And my wife is always like, where are the cops? Where are the cops? Because the only time you get in trouble here is if a cop actually sees you do it. You know, stop signs and freeways and everything.
Have you ever been pulled over in the States?
Yeah, a couple times.
Did you get tickets?
Yeah, yeah.
They probably, I'm guessing when a cop comes over and goes, hey, can I see your license and registration? You're like, oh yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They're like, oh, you're English. You're definitely getting a ticket.
You're also like, it's kind of thrilling. You're like, I'm in a movie. The cop's coming over and he's going to talk to me. And
Did you feel like they don't like you? Do they feel like,
well, I made an error. It was years ago when I first started working here, and I had a tape deck adapter for my iPhone that you put in the tape deck and it plays the song.
Yes.
And they always used to break, but I had many of them. And I got pulled over by a bike cop, and I was like, and I was going like 80 or something on the freeway because I was concentrating on what I was concentrating on driving, but like I was like changing the song on my phone. And I was in the left lane, and the cop was like, "And you were texting when I pulled you over." And I was like, "No, I was just changing." And I was just like so British, just like, "No, I was just changing the song on my that I was listening to." And like, well, you were still looking down, and but it was still kind of thrilling. I was like, "This is kind of fun." I can't remember how much it was.
You are the first person to actually enjoy getting a ticket. This is an experience.
It is an experience.
Yeah,
you know.
How long have you been doing this?
Acting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean. You know, I did it in school, and then I went to drama school in London when I left. I auditioned for a few when I finished school. I didn't get in the first year, and I reapplied, and I got in, and I graduated 2005, and then started working that year.
Yeah, but I'm talking like, you know, you're a young kid, you're growing up in England.
So
what's it like? Were your parents kind of like supporting this? Were there other actors in your family?
So first of all, I don't believe anyone who's like, I knew from a young age. I'm like, no, you like showing off and you like applause. Like you have no idea.
Absolutely.
You know, you have no idea what being an actor is or anything.
True. Like,
even when you're training or whatever, you have no idea.
But you could want to be famous at that age.
Yes. You can want to be famous, want people to clap at you.
And want money.
And yeah, I mean, at that point, it's not so much about money because you have no idea how much money you're going to need.
That's true.
Especially when you move to America.
Do you remember when you thought like, it's like, I'm going to make $100,000 and I'm going to be rich. And I'll take care of all my friends. Like, 100,000.
That's, I mean.
Good luck, man.
That's good a lot. Especially nowadays. I got my first TV regular. I got £26,000 for the whole season. And that was more than enough for me. It was like £1,000 a week for the, and that, you know, I was living on, you know.
No, but I thought 100,000 forever. Like, that's all you need.
Okay, no,
like, $100,000. I'm going to make $100,000 one day total. And I am going to be set. Now, go back to, you know, when you're talking about everybody, nobody wants to be.
So nobody wants to be famous. So, but I was basically a loud kid. And when I was 5 or 6, a teacher saw me screaming my lungs out, singing in the, you know, whatever, like assembly that we were having in the morning. He's like, you should come and do this. So they started to put me at the front of like singing or whatever in the, my pre, I don't know what you call that, like.
Preschool,
I guess. And then, yeah. And then when I went when I was 7, a teacher was like, you should audition for the school play. And so then that was what I did. And that was kind of my place in the school was like, I did the school plays every year. And that was my purpose.
And you liked it.
I loved it. And I loved, like, I was a bright kid and like very capable, but quite lazy. And like, so my dad would like kick me up the ass after my report cards and then my next report card would be really good. And then they just slowly tailor off as I got
right. more lazy. Just to prove that you could do it.
Yeah. And then I'd be like, okay, I'll make this one good.
Right.
Not that I'm a big brain or anything, but like, you know, you just, yeah, I was bright enough to get good grades.
Right.
And then I did the school plays right up until the end. And I just figured at some point when I was a teenager, like, well, that youthful naivety of what am I going to do as a job? Well, this is what I enjoy. So that's going to be my profession. And my dad, so my mom's a makeup artist for TV and film, makeup and hair. And my dad is a journalist who started as a print journalist and then TV and reporter. And then he worked his way up when he had kids. Like he started taking the money jobs and became like managing director of our local network, local TV network.
Right.
So the, you know, I was around the business more through my mom because I went to set sometimes and enjoyed the gossip that makeup artists partake in.
You know what's funny? Like fun I'll say it. This. My makeup artist on Smallville, Natalie, I worked with her for 7 years, 10 months a year. I've spent more time with each other than I have ever spent with anyone else in my life. I would spend 2 hours in makeup before, a half hour after. She'd always be on set. I'd always be talking to her. She'd always be powdering me. And you know how that goes. Mm-hmm. And I realized, like, I think I spent more time with her in a week than I have with my mother in 10 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she knew everything about me. She knows when I have a bad day, when she's having a bad day, if she's upset. Like it just became therapy. And like, she was my therapist. She should have got paid extra, a lot more than she was making.
It's the first person you meet and the last person you meet at the end of the day, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so they do have an important position outside of their physical job.
Yes.
Is talking to you at the beginning, and they have to deal with whatever's happened to you. You know, some actors wake up on the wrong side of bed. Mm. Some actors come in and they're like, yeah, everyone listen to the music that I'm listening to this morning. And like the makeup truck is, you have to balance the atmosphere in there. It's actually a really interesting spot on a set.
Yeah.
The makeup truck. And I see why some actors, well, a lot of actors like to have it done in their trailer or like have their own personal or whatever, because if you go into the makeup truck with everyone, you kind of have to deal with everyone else's energy.
It's kind of exhausting.
Well. Yeah, it can be.
It's kind of an energy sucker.
It can be, yeah.
But did your mom ever tell you any stories of any famous actors that she did the makeup for?
So she worked on I, Claudius, the 70s series.
Yes.
Like way back in the day. And then and then a bunch of other, her specialty was period hair and makeup. Wow. She would dress wigs and all that kind of stuff, which is really cool. We got to work together once about 8 years ago now.
She did your makeup really cool. And hair?
Yeah, she did my wig. I had this crazy Regency wig in a miniseries. But she did tell me this one story where, so then, you know, that there's been all obviously the Me Too and all this kind of stuff and like sexual harassment stuff all going on through the industry. And there's been a nice like clean out of certain behaviors. Mm-hmm. But she did tell me this one story of this actor who was who was sitting there having his makeup done by another artist next to her. And he had a gown on. He had the gown on. And the makeup artist was like seeing this happen underneath his.
No.
And so like the gown was like moving up and down while she was doing him. And so she smacked him around the back of the head and told him to stop it. And he took the gown off and was like, I was cleaning my glasses.
No way.
He was like cleaning his glasses under and she thought that he was masturbating.
Oh,
in the makeup chair.
I could see that, because if you're cleaning your glasses, let's just give an example here. You know, you're just like,
mm-hmm.
But you're using your thumb. Who does
that?
Well,
it depends how, like, you know, you can. You know.
I don't know.
Anyway, it's just to each his own. Funny. But then my mom talks about all those kinds of things, like, yeah, you know, actors would come on to you. And like, and that is a whole other part of the job that they used to deal with all the time. And, you know,
yeah,
sure, it still happens sometimes.
That's amazing. But she was my guiding light. She'd put the hot towel on me at night.
Mm-hmm. You like the hot towel?
Yeah, because my whole head and everything was just like tons of makeup. And then she would make sure I'm okay. And you got to remember, this is a woman who, if my call time was 6 a.m.,
her call time
was 5:30
mm-hmm.
to get it ready.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm wrapped at 7 or 8 at night, she's got to stay with me and then clean her stuff up and then leave a half an hour before after I do.
It's wild. My mom
to get home to her family to be a mom. Meanwhile, just extraordinary.
Yeah, it's really, filming is really hard on your personal life. Like it really
it is.
Like since I've had a child, I haven't been on a long job, and that's going to be hard, logistically hard. But also, like, I've been away, like, to do a convention or something for a weekend, and it's crazy. It feels like unnatural. You're like, I shouldn't be leaving my child, but you have to, like, you know, you weigh it up with, well, I have to, because I have to provide for my family and stuff. But it's a wild feeling to, like, oh, I should, and you get it in your gut of, like, this is wrong. I shouldn't be leaving.
Do you feel
my family.
Guilty?
I mean, I guess that's guilt. Yeah, I guess that's what it is. It's just like, but I'm confident in the fact that like he feels loved and he has a very nice family atmosphere at home and it's all good. But it's just an unnatural thing. Like you do fall into those categories of like, I'm a father now, so I'm the provider and the protector. And it just happens naturally. You know, it's weird.
What's the longest you've been away from?
Like 4 days.
That's it?
4 or 5, yeah.
Oh, so I thought maybe if you did, how old?
No, you see, I haven't done anything yet. So, last year when he was like 1, I went.
Oh, so he's very young.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, actually, when I shot Imaginary, the Blumhouse movie, I was away for, I guess, maybe 5 days at the most. But yeah, but it just, then you get home.
Where did Imaginary film?
New Orleans. Which like my wife, so when I do get the next big long job, my wife and I, we're all going to go together, but she would never have survived in New Orleans because she can't deal with the heat and the humidity. Like we've been there together, but last summer it was just, I don't know how people survive there. It's so like close.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Is imaginary, by the way, is it really scary? Have you seen it?
So I have seen it.
Yeah.
It's PG-13.
Right. So it's like along the lines of like a Megan.
Yes. It does as much as it can with the concept to keep within the parameters of PG-13. What I will say is that it has practical effects.
Oh, good.
Which is way more scary in my mind.
Yes.
And I was super excited about that. So every monster that appears in the movie is practical, which is so cool.
That's
for us
great.
As actors as well. Like, I've been fortunate in that I haven't done a huge amount of pretending there's a monster anywhere or pretending to see something. I've done it once or twice, but I think that's just even harder. You know, as good of an actor as you are, there's always going to be something in the back of your eyes that you're doing an extra job. It's like when you audition for something. I hate doing self-tapes.
Oh, yeah.
Because you are incapable of doing the job that you are going to do on set, because you are already creating all of this stuff in your head that's getting in the way of your performance.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, I have to pretend that I'm in that room, you know, whatever the scene is. I have to pretend that you're the person. I have to, you know, which happens in a casting room, but there's something, I don't know, self-tapes are even harder for me. But like, you have to be more fake than you would be. Like when you turn up on set.
Yeah, there's certain energy that you have when you're in a room.
Yeah, well, that's different because that when you're in a room, you have like a more of a, okay, I'm doing this.
I got to do this, man.
Yeah, and that helps. That really like gives you something. But doing a self-tape at home or in a studio is, you just lose a little bit of it.
You know what? I have only done 2 self-tapes.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Wow.
I did a self-tape for something I was interested in like a month ago. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't done it for a while. And I didn't want to memorize the lines.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So my buddy got his iPad, my friend Bill, who you met out there, mm-hmm. who was his girlfriend, was your production coordinator mm-hmm. on Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Old Flater, Andrea Flater. He got those emails from Flater. but we put it on his iPad. It scrolled. He would read the lines with me. We did it a couple times. I loved it.
Yeah.
I love not having to really prepare and just kind of giving. And you never would have known that I was reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost got it. I was very close to getting it. I was like, wow, this was actually fun. I'd rather not be in a room mm-hmm. with all these other clowns, mm-hmm. you know, judging me and making me feel nervous or whatever. And, you know, it's on my time. And if that worked, well, maybe this is the way to go. But do you prefer people around you like for the energy?
I did it again recently for the first time, an in-room audition. And it definitely had the energy to it.
Yeah.
The thing that is frustrating now, which I hadn't realized before, I've done a few long running shows now, is that I know that when I'm in a show, I'm very relaxed, and because I don't have the pressure of everything has to be right, because I know we're going to do it more than once and we have different angles on it. And so you can try things out and you can go different ways and you can,
yeah.
you know, because you know they're going to edit the best bits
together.
It's a
good way to think.
But like when on a self-tape, you have to get everything perfect or as perfect as you can, which is not what the job is. Like I feel like when you're on set, you should be able to change and move things. And I'm no performance will be exactly, not that I'm wildly from one end of the scale to the other, but it will always be slightly different. And that's what the editor enjoys and what the director enjoys and what you need to balance a show.
Because you have to get it on one take.
On a self-tape,
now, what on a self-tape, what if you did something where it's a self-tape and then page one, you screw up. So then you use take two and you just do a punch in.
Yeah, I mean, I've considered that. Like,
fuck it. If they think, you know, hey, just you can see what I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you really need it to be perfect? Because the other take had a better line reading on this one line.
I think you get a lot of like notes with them now of like, don't do this, don't do that. So I don't know, because I don't want to step on the casting director's toes either. Yeah. And it's like, I don't know, the whole thing. Really, I just want to meet the person that's going to hire me. Like, I really just want to sit down. Let's talk about what you want to do with this. And then, oh, great. Okay, let's play around with it and blah, 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 which is what will happen on set.
Yeah. But it psychs me out. Like, it psychs me out sometimes when you go into a casting room as an actor and they're like, hey, how you doing? And then you start talking and you start kind of goofing off and you're making them laugh and they're thinking you're great. And they're like, okay, you want to do this? And now I'm like, no. Now I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I want to do this right when I get in the room. Let's do it. And then maybe we could talk.
I had the problem.
I hate it.
I realized, and I was like, oh, I'm never going to be that actor. But I realized quickly that if I go in using my British accent, they will always think they can hear it when I do my American accent. So I started to go in with my American accent because otherwise they feel like they can hear it. And I always felt like, really, you're going to go in? But it's, you have to, because otherwise
they're listening to what you're saying as opposed to watching you perform.
Yes. And I always felt like the skill was between action and cut. So you walk in like, hey, how's it going? Cool. Let's chat. And then action, acting. But actually, you do kind of have to walk in with the energy of the character and like, and first impressions is everything, you know, and they meet you and then they do the tape, you know? So if you manage to shake their hand or do whatever you do and make them feel something just when the first time they've met you, that will make 50% of the impression, I think.
Do you think like if you were going in there and you were supposed to play some guy from like Brooklyn or something like that, you're like talking like this and you go in, you go, hey, nice to meet you. It's great. Thanks for having me. And just talking and like in that kind of, do you think that's a better way to approach it as to go or to go in there and just be yourself and then kick it in? And they're like, but that's doing an accent. It's the same thing, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying.
So you should just go in and do it.
I think so. And I think nowadays people respect that as well. You hear a lot about, the actor stayed in character or the actor stayed in accent at least, you know. Yeah. The funniest thing, when I joined Walking Dead, Andrew Lincoln, who plays Rick, we're from the same city in England. And we had actually met around the millennium because we were part of the same kind of after school theater group. And they did this benefit for the millennium and we were in it together. So I'd met him before. And then when we were on set together, when I first arrived to Walking Dead, we went and sat in the on the deck of one of the houses in Alexandria and like just kind of chatted and caught up. And he was using his American accent because he would stay in his accent to just, you know, so he didn't fall out of it while he was filming. So then, which is something that I never did. Like when I'm working, I'm working, like I flip in and out, but we were having this conversation and I was like, okay, I need to use my American accent. So then we were talking about growing up in the city that we grew up in and his kids and his family in our American accents. And it was the most bizarre thing I've ever done. I was like, this is so weird.
Give me an example. Yeah, I remember when we were...
Yeah, we're just talking about his kids and how, you know, my daughter goes to this school. And I'm like, oh, really? Yeah, I have a friend who went to that school. And I'm just like, but we're talking about things that... from
your like American Rainy. Accent is really solid. Like I remember it in the show when you played Jesus. Yeah. Jesus, yeah. Right?
Jesus.
Some would say Jesus.
Yeah, well, not in that show.
Not in that show. No, I know. You had followers and whatever. But I never thought for a second you were English.
Yeah. Which is great. I mean, I've lived here since 2010 and people ask me about that all the time. And I say, actually, it's to do with the fact that I don't like to stand out too much in my day to day. And so I use my American accent all the time in America. I don't want to explain where I'm from my whole life. Like, you know, oh, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Boston. I don't want people to be like, wait, what did you say? You know?
Yeah.
So I say water instead of water and like all that. And if I'm ordering in a bar, I'll always order in my American accent.
Right.
It's just easier. It just makes my life
easier. So you're pretty much living a lie.
Yes. Yes. Although I just got my citizenship a couple of weeks ago.
You did?
So I am American now.
You're American. I'm American.
I am fully. And now no one can say, go back to your own country because this is my country.
Who would say that?
Oh, well.
Have you ever had that?
I mean, you are.
Go back to Australia.
I'm not
from Australia.
Well, no one is. We sent them all there.
that's true. You did. Yes.
But I mean, Yeah, I mean, if you ever express any kind of an opinion on something that's happening in America, people will be like, well, this isn't your country. Or like, who do you think you are having an opinion on this country? And actually, a lot of the time, I'm not going to get too political on this, but a lot of the times, I feel more invested in this country than people who were born here. Because I have worked hard to live here and exist here and pay taxes here and now take my citizenship here. And people talk about how like, oh, it's easy. It's not easy. And it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I've invested a lot in this country. And I believe in this country and what this country was founded on and the freedom that this country gives. I really do. And that's why my wife and I left our countries and came here.
Wow.
And I feel like people forget in this country what it represents to a lot of people around the world.
Yeah.
And why they come here. You know, it's not for a free ride. It's because you get more respect and you're allowed to do more than other countries where they don't, you know, they don't live the life that you can live.
Yeah, I think we're very lucky. I do. I mean, we get a bad rap for, you know, a lot of stuff, deservedly so.
Yeah, every country has this.
Yeah, well,
I
could say, you know, sometimes I'm, you know, but I love living in this country. Whenever I'm abroad and I'm gone for a couple of weeks, there always comes a time where I'm like, I just want a hamburger. I just want to be back in the States. I don't care how great Italy is and how great France or Germany or whatever. They're all great places to go. I'm going to Italy, but I'm like, I want to be back home.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be back
home. Where are you from?
I was born in New York, but I grew up in Southern Indiana.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And
is it very different?
College in Kentucky, moved back to New York, did some off-Broadway, moved to LA, and I've been here for 25 years.
Wow.
So
I think one of the things that Europeans don't really realize is that it's kind of maybe the wrong thing to say, but like America is not really a country. It's a collection of countries. So if
Absolutely.
You drive across, it really is the United States of America. My wife and I have driven across like 4 or 5 times at this point. And you really realize when you drive through all of the different states, how different each state is and how different the rules are and how different people are.
The mentality.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I was talking to this girl that I met on a dating app a while back. Yeah, anyway.
Which one?
No, but it doesn't matter. You probably know it. But no, you don't. You're married. But you probably still know it. But we're talking and, you know, she's talking about guys like sort of in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, you know, she wants to get. She wants to be married eventually and she mm-hmm. wants to, and I'm like, all right. And, but she's used to guys in Northern Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm not saying these are bad guys, mm-hmm. probably great, some great guys, but if you go from there to Dallas, Texas guys, to Los Angeles guys, to maybe Indiana boys, and then go up the road down up to New York City boys, completely different people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just completely different. So, but I agree. There's just, you know, it's a melting pot. It's.
Well, that's what's great.
Yeah.
That's really what's great. And that's why the immigration argument is kind of frustrates me, because it's really what this country is founded on. And it's really cool. It's what makes this country what it is, you know?
Yeah.
It's cool. And it's been very good to me.
Did Walking Dead change your life, didn't it?
Yeah, I'd had a career where, so I left drama school and I managed to get a really good agent straight off the bat. So was able to do a bunch of auditions, which, you know, it's a theater training in England. So like, it was very beneficial to do a lot of TV and film auditions and not get most of them, but like be going through the motions. And I got screen tested for a film called Hannibal Rising, which
I remember that.
Rest his soul, Gaspar Ulliel ended up doing. Who's the Dina De Laurentiis apparently really liked my tape and it just got a little bit of heat around me, which my agent then used to propel me forward, and I did a movie and blah, 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 blah. And then I had a few different occasions where I was like, oh, this is it. This is it. This is the job that's going to do it. This is it. This is it. Oh, nobody cared. Dude, it happened like so many times. And you,
what
really
are the ones that you thought would pop?
Well, so, but what that ends up being is that there are increments. You are going up the ladder, but just not, you're not making those big leaps. So I did the movie that got me to move out here and got me my representation was a movie called Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day, which was a Focus Features movie. And we had Frances McDormand and Amy Adams, and Kieran Hines and Shirley Henderson, Mark Strong, like some amazing people. And it was a small period comedy that we made at Ealing Studios in London. And I this is what I was would always tell people as well. Like, I've always reinvested in my career and spent the money and just kept going. And so for that movie, I flew myself to New York for the screening. There was no like big premiere, but there was a New York screening. Flew myself to New York, and then after New York, flew myself to LA. I stayed with Amy and her then boyfriend at their house in LA, and took meetings, got my manager then, and then did some pilot auditions that year, I think. And then the next year I came back, did some pilot auditions, got tested on a couple of things. And then the next year I came back, I got Luck, which was the HBO show that started my whole journey here. But I mean, continued my journey here.
Yes.
But I am... Luck was like, I mean, I thought that was it. That was like, I'm on an HBO. This is my first American television show.
Look at
I'm
the director. HBO, look at the casting.
Michael Mann, Nick Dustin Nolte. Hoffman, Nick Nolte, like Dennis Farina, like
yeah, how John does that Ortiz. Not become a hit?
Dude, so there was a lot of reasons, I think, at the end of the day. But like, it was Milch and it was David Milch and it was very dense dialogue. And it was very, you know, you required something of you to really get into it and learn the ins and outs of horse racing.
And it wasn't easy to learn the lines, probably.
Well, I was also playing Cajun in that, which is a whole other thing. And I didn't even know. So I went down to Louisiana and spent some time out there to understand what that meant and who these people are.
You had a Cajun accent.
Yeah.
Can you still do it?
A little bit, maybe.
What is a Cajun accent?
Well, it's like half French. It's a lot of French in there. So,
oh my God,
they talk about, you know, so they, okay. So I went and spent some time with a family down there and we went out to their, they had crayfish fields and, in Louisiana, can't remember the exact place, but I hung out with them for the weekend and the guy took me out on his gator, his, like
yep.
forward thing. And he was taking me out to the fields and he was like, and that's where I hit the alligator with the spade. But he kept coming, so I had to hit him again. And I'm like, wow, I'm not in England anymore. Like, this is crazy.
That's great.
It was a whole thing. And but it's really cool culture, like great food, but a very like tough people. And so that was like something else. So I was playing American, but it was like a certain type of American. And then John Ortiz played my trainer and he was Peruvian. And then you had all this like dense dialogue and you had Nick Nolte doing the Nick Nolte. Like, wait, what's Nick saying?
How
like,
is he? A lot of,
great, man. Like, I was, it's just also kind of blasphemous maybe, but like I
Fuck
was
you,
so excited to work with Nick because, and I only had like one or two scenes with him and one or two scenes with Dustin. And Dustin's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Love him. Great, great man, great career. But I was more impressed with working with Nick just because Dustin was more of a character actor to me. And Nick represented to me like an old Hollywood leading man, like gruff, like guy that doesn't really exist anymore.
Just a dude that's just, you know, that's what I do.
Yeah.
And
I was a huge fan of 48 Hours.
Oh, yeah.
Like, huge 48
Hours.
Best
scene is when he's with Eddie Murphy and he goes, Jack, tell me a story. Fuck you, convict. Oh, that's one of my favorites.
That movie is just.
It's so good.
Genius. Oh, and
Walter Hill.
Yeah.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
We had Walter Hill was involved in...
I'm getting him on the podcast.
Oh, dude, he's great. And he was involved in Luck as well. We had Walter Hill involved. We had Eric Roth involved. We had all these like insane people. We would do these readings of the episodes and you'd have all of the lead actors sat around the table and Michael and Eric Roth would come in and all these people. And then we would go for coffee on Bundy, like breakfast on Bundy with Farina. And I was 27, but I was kind of still too young to take it all in. And nowadays I would like have more reverence for all of it. But then I was like flying by the seat of my pants, 27, just like,
you thought this was it.
Oh, and then I was like, this is it. I'm made.
And they just, how many did they make?
So we made, I think 10 for the first season and we had shot one of the second season And then there was various things going on. The horses, we had a couple horses break down and had to be euthanized. And I just think that it, and TMZ was on our ass about that. And then I think we just weren't popular enough. And the show, I think, was very expensive. Like if you went to the parking lot, you had the three huge like tour bus trailers, like one for Dustin, one for Michael, and one for David Milch. Like just lined up.
Oh, you didn't get one.
I didn't at that point.
That's right.
I can't remember if I had a two banger or a three banger at that point. But no, I was just, that was a great thing. But then that got canceled. And honestly, I was in one scene in the first episode of season two. And I was like, okay, I've got 6 months of one or two scenes an episode is not great. And then we got canceled. And then I was able to do a movie, which was another big step in my career. Like, and also I was at the center of this Hollywood whirlwind of like everyone. The best thing was at that time was to walk into meetings and have people ask me what Michael Mann was like. I'm like, oh, people want to ask me about stuff now. Like, this is cool.
Yeah.
People want to know like what this experience was like. So that kind of gave me like a nice spring to my step. And then I was able to go to Europe and do a movie, which was my first lead in a movie with Stellan Skarsgård and Ben Kingsley.
Right.
And that was my first big lead. That was 3 months in Germany and Morocco. And that was a whole other experience. And that was a movie that I was like, and this is it. This is going to change my career. This is my first big
lead. So yes, I see all these projects that you think on paper should be huge successes.
Yeah.
But Ben Kingsley.
Yeah.
Nick Nolte. Dustin Hoffman.
It did great. You know, at that point I had moved to America.
It helped you.
It helped me in a lot of different ways. But I had moved to America at that point and I was like, luck, and this is America and we're doing America. And then that movie came out and it did really well in Europe. Nothing in America. Nobody cares. And it's kind of, you know, Walking Dead. Walking Dead was another huge deal. And it was my first big thing after that movie. I think I got, well, it was the first big thing. Yeah, I think so. And same kind of thing. Walking Dead, biggest show in the world. Biggest show in the world when I joined it. There was nowhere in the world you can go and not be recognized, especially since I had long hair and a beard. I was very recognizable, hugely successful.
Now, that was a real beard.
Yeah. The first season, it was fake.
First season was fake, yeah.
And the hair, I had extensions, but I grew the beard out, and then the extensions grew less and less while I was on the show. But huge thing. This is amazing. Industry doesn't care. You know, you're like, it's the biggest, literally the biggest show in the world. Industry doesn't care. And I'm like, wow. This is another lesson. Like, you know, you're on top of the world. This is great. I get recognized everywhere. This is definitely raising my profile. Huge fan base.
I didn't think of it like that.
It's wild. It like Instagram.
So the fans are nuts. They love the show. It's everywhere. You go to cons, they just embrace you guys. But you're saying the industry doesn't really give a shit.
It definitely didn't.
You know, you're on a hit show and you're seen by all these people, millions of people. Why wouldn't they want to put you in a movie or another TV show immediately? Because all those fans are going to want to see what you're doing.
And that's what would make sense to me. Yeah. But it's, you know, industry can be funny like that, you know, and then you can, or you can be on a show like Succession, which I enjoyed and I thought was great. But compared to like Walking Dead, like nobody watched it.
No.
But the industry loved it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that just happens. You know,
Succession's too much for me. It's too much stress. I can't watch it.
Yeah.
I have dysfunction growing up. I don't need that.
Yeah, I know. It's very fine. Stressful.
I don't need it. I'm sure it's great.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
It's very British. You can tell it's written by a British person, but with American accents. Like,
right.
Like, for us, it's like a black comedy.
Yeah.
Succession.
Did you hate wearing that beard in the first season?
Yes. I hate facial hair.
But did you hate it because when you saw it, you're like, oh, it's fake?
Yes. I signed those photos from the first season at conventions and I hate it. But it's the most recognizable version of me. And it's when people first met me on the show. And I had a really great first episode that was very memorable.
Yes.
So people like really remember that. I'm like, it's terrible. But it does look different the other seasons, but people remember that. And, you know, I had a shit ton of extensions and
how long were you in makeup?
Oh, I can't remember. Like
at least an hour.
45 minutes. Well, we had the FX team. I got passed on to the FX team to do that. And we ended up cutting it into like five different sections. It was really wild. I got cast on a Wednesday. No, I got cast on a Friday. I was in London. My girlfriend at the time was in Stockholm. I flew to Stockholm to see her that weekend. And then I flew to London to be fitted for they had the beard made in London. And then I flew to Atlanta and I was filming on the Wednesday. It was
Quick.
Everything like,
were you nervous?
Yes. I had not worked for a year before that
point. So you felt like, do I have it still?
I just... my first scene was like me unconscious in a car, but my first proper scene with Andrew Lincoln and Norman. So they're the two biggest guys on the show, and the whole episode is just me and them. And
isn't it like in a town, if I remember? Or it's like a little
Sonoya they shoot it down, which is like an hour south of Atlanta, where they have the studios and where they shoot everything. So it's nice because you're kind of away from LA, away from New York, right. Just in your own bubble. But my first... my character's been running and I like appear in front of them. And we had Kari Skoglund directed that, who's a wonderful director who's doing amazing now. And she was really good to me on the episode. And she came in and was just like, just a little bit quieter and more real. Cause I was like, I'm running and I was like shouting at my first, like, hey guys. And I was like, okay, this is way too big. Like,
but that's how you kind of felt like a real person would do it.
Yeah.
But then you have to come down to TV movie world. You're like, where normally you'd say like, no, don't do it. And then you're like, no, don't do it. Don't do it.
And also like the show, that was season 6, and the show had kind of found its groove and found its style. Yeah. And everyone kind of had their lane that they were occupying.
Yep.
And so you had to kind of fit in to that aesthetic.
Were there egos?
I mean, yeah, everyone has an ego. Especially when it's the biggest television show in the world. You know, so definitely people, like I said, had fallen into lanes of like, this is what the show is and this is where we are.
You could just tell their sort of swagger, like, yeah, I'm on a big hit show.
I think it affected some people that I was like, it's a TV show.
Yeah.
I did respect it. Absolutely. But I definitely always had the attitude of it's a TV show.
It's a TV show. And did you like those people?
Yeah, yeah.
You liked everybody. Get along with
them. And we spend a lot of time together outside of the show at conventions. We're going to see each other, you know, forever, I think, at this point. And I've seen forever and ever, you know,
that's a good thing.
It is great. And it's a very singular experience being on a show like that, which is so big, doesn't happen to everyone, you know, like Game of Thrones or Walking Dead. Like, you've only had that experience with those people. So it's cool to reminisce but it's weird now. Cause like, even like the Luck experience, I'm like, I was still unaware. Like, when you're in it, you're kind of unaware of how big it is. If I'm honest right now, I'd be like, damn, I should have made more money. Like, outside of the show, you know, just like, damn. Like, I did a bunch of conventions and it was great and we made money, and that's honestly how I bought my house. But like, I should have like done other stuff just while that show was the hottest show in the world.
Yeah.
Like, just milk it.
Well, because hindsight's 2020, absolutely. My friend.
Then you have a fallow period and you're like, damn.
You know who I always liked is the character Eugene, Josh McDermott.
Yeah, Josh McDermott. Yeah,
he seems funny. I always want to get him on the podcast. Josh is funny.
He's the driest human being you will ever meet.
So he makes jokes just like, I'm on the floor.
Absolutely. And I am very gullible. So he would always
mess with
like,
you.
Oh my God. And he's so good at it. Like, he's very good at I'm terrible at a straight face. And like, he's just very, very good at it. And he's great. And he's very different to his character. Like, he played he's a comedian, you know, he did stand up and everything. And like, he's a very capable person. You know?
Were you surprised because your death kind of came out of nowhere? Mm-hmm. The fans were kind of like, what? Whoa. Mm-hmm. What? They weren't expecting it at all. And in the comics, you don't die.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So were you surprised? When did you know about it?
I think the episode before, maybe. But honestly, I've spoken about this a lot. Like, I had been on the show for 3 years at that point. It's the longest I've ever been on a show.
You were good.
Yeah, it was good. I was really honestly good. And I just want to tell a good story. Like, I'm not precious about it. Like, if it's my time to go, it's my time to go. Just make it cool. And
good death.
It was cool. Yeah, I was really happy with it. I honestly was really happy with it. And when I have fans come up to me and go, oh, like, I was really sad, I was like, yeah, that's good. That's how you're meant to feel.
Did you cry when it was over? No.
I had a little bit of, because it was, you know, such an intense experience, I did have a little bit, when I gave my little speech on set.
A little emotional.
I was like, oh, this is the last time I'll do this. You know,
did you say it in English or an American accent?
English, I think. There's a video of it somewhere.
There's a video of it.
You know what? I don't know.
You don't know what you did?
No, I think English.
That's pretty amazing. What about Kevin Costner's?
Dude, that I did cry.
Because my friend Michael Rooker's in that, right?
Yeah, I love Michael.
Because he's been kind of filming that for a while.
Yeah.
How long did you film that? What's it called?
It's called Horizon.
Horizon.
Horizon, an American Saga. And it's part one and part two.
And it's coming out this summer.
June and August, yeah.
It sounds amazing.
It's like, old school filmmaking. So Kevin's been working on that project since the 80s, I think, at this point. And it started off as one movie and over the years has grown and grown. And he finally got the opportunity to make it. And I found myself out in the wilds of Utah. My story takes place within the wagon train portion. It's really this like sprawling tale of the American West in the 1800s. And yeah, I'm on the wagon train. So I'm just standing there in my costume with all the wagons and the horses. And I got emotional because it's just like everything that you think a movie is when you're a kid and you want to be in the movies. And you're just standing there. And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, I'm here. You know, and I'm like, it's very ensemble. Like I'm one of the actors in it, amongst many others. And I think I worked, a total of 2 weeks, maybe. Oh no, I think a week straight, because they shot, you know, set in sections for different storylines. I think I shot a week straight for the first one. And then that was it. You know, you go, you have this experience.
How was Kevin?
Amazing.
He's very subtle. I remember I auditioned for The Postman, mm-hmm. and I went to his hotel room. This is eons ago. Mm-hmm. And he goes, yeah, just sit on the floor with me. Sit on the floor. You know, all right, let's mm-hmm. yeah, let's just hang out. And we're going to read the scene a couple of times and we'll just talk. I was there for like a half an hour, 40 minutes. He's like, all right, man, how'd you like that? It was great. Thanks, Kevin. He's like, hey, nice to meet you, man. Yeah. I didn't get it, but yeah. it was a great time. He was a great guy.
Amazing. When I got the role, I think my manager had just kind of pitched me for it basically. And the casting director liked me. And then it was like, okay, so Kevin wants to meet you. And I was at my family home, in Bath where I come from. And, I went up to the top of the house to my dad's office to Zoom with the casting director and Kevin and, you know, turn on the screen. Casting director's like, okay, and here's Kevin, and we're just gonna leave you guys to it. I was like, okay. And then we had a chat. And
hey, bud, how are you?
Yeah. And I'm used to like pitching myself, you know, like, oh, I love the script and like this and this and this and this. And through our conversation, halfway through, I realized, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Shut up, because he's trying to sell it to you. He was like telling me about the film and like, it's going to be this and it's going to be that. And he finished like, and I would love you to join us. And inside I'm going, what? Like, you're offering me.
That's okay. So cool.
And I was like, oh my God, I would love to, Kevin. That would be amazing. And then we stopped the call and I went down. My wife was giving my son a bath. And I was like, Kevin Costner just offered me a job. It was like the most surreal experience. And then a few months later, we're on set in Utah and he's directing. And it was just a wild experience. And everyone was so happy to be there because it's such a passion project for him. And you could just feel that a lot of time and effort had gone into all parts of it. Everyone was so happy to be there and excited to help Kevin achieve his
How old is vision. He now? 70?
I don't know. I'm not going to guess. I think he's still in his 60s. I don't know.
No.
I have to check.
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah, I'm not going to hazard a guess. Maybe 70. I don't know.
He's just one of the all time great. I'm going to say 72.
I mean,
he's 69.
69. There you go.
He just turned 69.
So I didn't. He's also like from my childhood.
He has seven children.
Yeah, I know.
Can you imagine having two children?
So Stellan, who I also work with, I think has 8 or 9.
What?
In Sweden, it's easier. Because in Sweden, the government helps you a lot more than they help you here. Like you get like, honestly, like with my wife and I, like having more kids, we have considered like, where can we be? Because America doesn't help you at all. And yeah. They just like charge you through the ass to have kids.
Yeah.
Every step of the way, it's kind of nuts.
What do you think is like, you know, we've talked about all these great moments and like your career building and like working with all these great people. But also, have you had those tough moments? I mean, you're at 40, 41?
41,
What's the toughest time you've had so far? And, you know, because on this show, we could talk a lot about mental health and you know, helps a lot of people. But is there something that was a tough time to get through and you needed to work through it?
I was very go throughout my 20s and kind of into my 30s as well. And like always looking forward, always keep moving. The first time that I ever really had a breakdown that I couldn't deal with was shooting that movie, The Physician, because it was 65 days, I think. And I was in every single day and I had never done that before.
Exhausted.
It just physically. Yeah. You get up every day and you're doing it and it's great. But about halfway through that movie, I fell apart and had a bit of a breakdown. I was in a previous relationship, and that was also very taxing on me. I was in a kind of a carer role in that relationship. Mm-hmm. She had joined me on the film, and halfway through, I had this breakdown, and I realized, like, oh, I can't go to you. So I went somewhere else. And then that movie, like, kind of that, and that movie signaled the end of that relationship kind of thing, which, you know, I kind of committed Harry Carey on that. You know, I was like, okay, I need to get out of this in a very destructive way.
Which self-sabotage.
And I absolutely did, because I honestly was too cowardly to get out of it in any other way. And like, I had so much going on, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to do something bad. And
when you're young, you learn from those things.
Absolutely. But I would never get into that situation again.
Right.
I had been in that relationship from 19. For a long time through my growth into an adult. And actually, I would argue that I didn't really grow into an adult until that relationship ended. And I had done that movie. And then I went through a lot of looking at myself. And my now wife has really helped me to grow as a person. And basically, because she questioned me and like was like, why are you doing this pattern of behavior? And she broke up with me. Like we dated for a bit, and then she broke up with me. She's like, you're not ready for this. And I was like, oh shit, I really want
to
be with this
person. You don't know how to just.
Yeah. I was still being a bit destructive and not respecting her. I was still, because I functionally was just growing but I knew that I didn't want to lose that person as well. So
yeah,
there was a lot of stuff going on, but I knew that I wanted to have children with this person. And I like deep down, I was like, this is the person. Shit. I got to figure this out. So I did. I took some time and you know, you just have to deal with some home truths and be honest with the person that you're in a relationship with as well. And if you're lucky, that person is capable of helping you through that. Not that you should rely on the other person and just put out all of your stuff.
Knowing you can count on them.
Yes.
That's important.
Knowing you can count on them and knowing that they have your best interests.
Yeah.
And that they're not using you as a crutch or vice versa.
Yeah. You know what sucks is like sometimes it takes hitting rock bottom before we make a change.
Yeah.
And you don't want to get to rock bottom to make the change, because rock bottom could mean devastation in many different ways. And whether you completely lose someone or you're responsible for someone or your behavior is it's the toughest. But if you could somehow, that's why I always say, get into therapy, talk to somebody, work on yourself. Because you don't want to get there. You don't want to go, no, I'm fine, until you're so not fine that you're really in a bad place, that it's going to take a lot more effort to get out of it. So,
but at least, I mean,
but you learn from it.
You learn from it. And you can also see, you know, the only way is up from rock bottom as well. And you really, like, if you're not completely destroyed, like you can work your way up again. I just remembered, like, the reason I had a bit of a breakdown, that movie, I got to the end of that movie, and then I realized I had to confront the relationship and like, okay, we have to end this. And it was painful for a lot of different reasons. But one of the major ones was that it was the first thing that I had ever failed at.
Wow. Yes.
I had never, because there were issues in the relationship and there were issues with the person, and I was waiting for the person to get better. And I was like, I can help this person. And then I realized I couldn't, and I would never be able to fully help this person. And so I had to exit the relationship, and it was the first thing that I couldn't get through. And I had failed. I had never felt like that before, because I'm always like, go, I'm doing this. And my career was on the up and everything was working. And this is, you know, this will be fine. And then I had to admit it would never be fine. And maybe I wasn't the person to help this person, you know. And I remember you get all those really dark thoughts and like comes up from your guts. And it's
they say every great, you know, mind says that the only way to truly succeed is to fail.
You
have to fail time and time again. And some people who haven't had real failure, it hurts and it sucks. And the older you get, the worse it is. But if you can get through that, which you will.
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly, unless you kill someone, that's utter failure. No, but it should make you a better person. You should come out of it stronger and wiser.
And you're right, you will. You know,
you will.
If you can just keep going, and it's the hardest thing, but if you keep going, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and you'll look back and you'll be in a much greater position than you were in every way, you know?
Yeah. All right. This is called Shit Talking with Tom Payne. This is my patrons. Go to patreon.com/insideofyou. Thank you for the support. They support the show. They get to ask some questions. And you ready?
Okay.
But if you don't like them, you can just say,
sure.
Beat it. Meg K, prodigal son, still gutted over the cancellation. You're phenomenal as Malcolm. The way mental illness was portrayed was just fantastic. Was it conscious choice on your part or the writer's part to show Malcolm not only taking his meds, but showing the bottles on camera, considering it's not something that has been done a lot?
I just did a convention last weekend where this girl came up to me and said, it meant a lot to me that Malcolm was on exactly the same medication that I'm on. And I met a lot of people through the show online, but also in real life, in person. And it's helped them immensely to show someone struggling with mental illness on TV. And in a way that, yeah, the show was funny and it was scary and all these things, but at the heart of it, this character was dealing with very real problems that would manifest in different ways. And it became apparent to me while we were shooting and the show started to air, how many people were dealing with similar issues. And I think it's amazing. That's why we do what we do. You know, it's a holding a mirror up to life and showing people that you can get through it.
Yeah. I'm going to let you go, but what can we expect? What's coming up? Imaginary is coming up.
So Imaginary is out March 8th.
March 8th. In theaters, too.
In theaters, which is so
That's so
cool.
exciting.
So exciting. This is my first American studio release. I've never been in an American studio movie, and I have two coming out this year. So I'm
Bravo,
super
friend.
Excited about that. And I'm on the train, the promotional train. I'm like, oh, wow, Lionsgate, you know,
good.
Sending me out to all these things, doing these. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. And yeah, Horizon's coming out.
Horizon, An American Saga, Parts 1 and 2, June and August.
June and August. I mean, what else?
Well,
Prodigal Son?
No.
That's gone.
That's,
Gee,
that
that's what
is
you
gone.
Said.
That became a... that's a rights issue, I think, because Fox owned some of it. Warner Brothers owned some of it. It was on Hulu. It was on HBO Max. It was like, how do we get all of this together and sell it on? And
it's
then
probably a lot of work, you know, too.
A lot of work.
It?
Yeah. And then when everything falls out, all the actors are out of contract, and how do you get everyone together again? And it just becomes a bit of a struggle in that sense. But I would, you know, that show was... I mean, that was my show. It was really cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're a great guy and a talented guy. By the way, did you do any impressions?
No, I mean, no.
You don't? Because you do accents so effortlessly.
Yeah, I think I'm a pretty good mimic, but I don't have anything in my back pocket.
So if I did an impression, you could like mimic that?
Sure.
All right.
Maybe.
Your son, fuckhead that he is.
Okay, I need to. That's maybe that's true.
Tom.
Yo.
You're a great guy, Tom.
Tom, you're a great guy, Tom.
That's pretty good.
On the way.
And you just off the cuff,
dude. My favorite Chris Walken is in Seven Psychopaths.
I didn't see it.
Dude, it's great. He comes. So the guy comes up to him and is like, "Yo, put your fucking hands up." And he goes, "No." He's like, "Why?" I don't wanna. Like, it's so good.
I don't want
it's
to.
So Chris Walken's like, "I don't want to." I'm like, "Oh, it's so
I don't
want to
do it."
He's great.
That is amazing. I've been trying to work on my Harrison Ford. It's hard though.
You know, my
really
son's called Harrison.
He is?
Yeah. And it's kind of Harrison. It's definitely related to Harrison Ford.
Right there.
I went to the Yellowstone, not Yellowstone, the 1923 premiere, just because I wanted to be in the same room as Harrison Ford. And then it was good.
Look, kid.
Oh, my brother and I have started to put together projects, and it's a lot inspired by the Indiana Jones movies. Like, we want to like bring back stories and
Man.
Adventure stories and
good,
and a lot of that is just great. You know, the Indiana Jones movies are great, and I used to say there are only three. I saw the most recent one and there could be four now. I don't know,
you know,
I liked
one and two. I like Temple of Doom and Raiders.
Yeah, me too.
Those
you didn't
are
like
my
Last Crusade?
No, I thought it was a little hokey. I remember as a kid oh, there's a dad. His dad's in this. I'm not watching this. No, it's pretty good. It's not like the other two.
You know,
and the last one was okay. It was, you know, it was okay.
I went, so people ask me like about conventions. Is there anyone that you'd like to meet and stuff? And it's honestly always taken me by surprise, because I'm not someone who gets starstruck really, but sometimes you get caught by surprise. So I did a convention a few years ago and John Rhys-Davies was there.
He was just sitting where you are.
Oh, he was?
I just had him on.
So John is just, he's such, he's just like, he's like, you should come to the club in London, dear boy.
Wait till you listen to him.
Oh, I can't wait.
On the podcast.
I can't wait.
I mean, it's epic.
Yeah.
It's epic.
He is
We talked
amazing.
About Cialis and boners in the first minute
yeah.
or two.
Oh, dude. If you do a photo with him, he tickles you. Like, he like grabs you.
Yeah,
under
he
here.
Was messing with, yeah.
Yeah. He's messing with me.
So a lot of the photos of people like, but I did a convention with him years ago, and I got, my brother is a huge Indiana Jones fan, as am I, and I was like, I'm going to get my brother an autograph picture. So I went over and I got him Ron from like the Raiders, I think he's
yeah,
like,
yeah,
Ron.
Yeah.
And he finished doing it, and he was like, and would you like one? He like, looked up at me, and I got tearful, and he was like, yeah, I would actually.
Oh, he signed my indie.
He's just, he was so
John
great.
Rees
and I had drinks with him at the bar that night. I was like, it's so bizarre.
What a nice man.
He's awesome. Yeah.
He was so sweet.
He was doing shots with, not shots, photographs with Andy Serkis last weekend.
Oh, man.
Because they were both in, I mean,
Lord
what
of
a
the
great,
Rings, yeah.
like Indiana Jones and then Lord of the Rings. Like,
yeah.
He's got it made as far as conventions go.
He's got it made.
And Sliders as well. He did the whole TV,
yeah.
TV thing.
You did. What else did you do?
Skins?
You did Skins
yeah, yeah,
too,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Somebody else was just on Skins. Nicholas Holt.
Oh, you had Nick.
He was here.
Yeah. He's taking over your part now.
I know, the son of a bitch.
I just, James just posted a picture of them all. And Nick has his shaved head.
What's that?
James just posted a picture of them all.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, Nick.
Because Nick sent me a picture and I obviously didn't post
it. Oh, he did.
But yeah.
Yeah.
But he's buzz cut, right?
Yeah, I think so. Did you do bowl cap?
Oh, no, I shaved it.
Oh, you did?
7 years I shaved it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because
that's what they wanted. And it was better.
Yeah, it's always better.
In the end, I realized it would have taken longer.
I have a movie that I'm hopefully going to do at the end of this year, and I want to shave my head in it. Is my wife is just like, you should do that. It's
It'll grow
you
back.
Haven't done. Exactly.
And it feels great. You'll love it.
Yeah.
If it's just for a movie,
yeah.
100% do it.
I've never done it, and I like, it's a look that I haven't done. I'm like, yeah, we should
do it 100%.
Yeah.
You like it. This has been great.
Yeah.
Did you have fun?
Yeah.
Always. Yeah, thanks, man. This is awesome.
I could talk for England, so.
I love it. I loved it.
Talk forever.
Tom Payne, you know, his agents or his publicists,
mm-hmm.
they messaged me, and I didn't really know Tom very well. But then I looked at his stuff and I said, you know, his wiki page and started to delve into some of the, and I was like, this guy's good. And it was great having him over because I really enjoyed having him over, and he's a very talented guy. So thank you, Tom, for coming over and doing the podcast. And a reminder, if you like this podcast, go to my Instagram at the Michael Rosenbaum, and you can go to the link tree, and there's so much stuff going on in my world, cons and cameos and all that stuff. A lot of fun. And in the Talkville pod, if you haven't listened to the Talkville pod, Ryan's on that. Ryan has a great time,
pod.
Don't you?
I have a wonderful time on the Talkville pod.
You become a star.
I don't go that far, but yeah.
Well, people know you.
But people know me. The people beyond my close circle of friends know me.
Do you have a cold?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
You look a little congested.
A little congested? I had to get up early today. We had
a
10 a.m. interview.
Yeah. Well, I got up at 7 because I felt like such crap waking up. You know, when I eat like shit, Ryan, I had a cheeseburger and fries for dinner. I had a soda, which is, I shouldn't, I know. And then I had popcorn. And I wake up and I'm like, oh, why do I feel like crap?
Yeah.
I don't know, because you ate like crap. Your car's not going to run well if you put crap into it. Crappy gas.
Gas crap.
So it's like what I said, you know, so I wake up and I take some of my athletic greens and I have a salad. And I start the day off right, but I have to finish the day right.
It's true. A lot of emphasis on starting the day right, not enough on finishing it right.
Yeah. Let's see if that works.
Huh.
You know what I'm saying?
I think you just stumbled on something.
Yeah.
I've
been... Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening. I always appreciate it. And thanks to my top tier patrons and all my patrons, honestly, every patron. Thank you for the support. Patreon.com/InsideOfYou. We are now going to give the top tier patrons a shout out as one of the perks. Here we go. Nancy Day. D. Bad start. Leon Kristen, Little Lisa, Yukiko. Hi, Yukiko. Thanks for still being here. And Jill E. and Brian H. And Nico P and Robert B and Jason W, Sophie M, Raj C, you're welcome. Jennifer N, Stacy L, Jamal F, Janelle B.
Mike E, Eldon Supremo.
Give it with love, like love.
99 more. Santiago M. You're listening to 94.7 The Wave. Leanne P, Maddie S, Belinda N, Dave H, Brad D.
Wait. Dave H.
Dave H. Dave Hall.
That's Dave Hall, Michael.
It's only Dave Hall.
I love Dave H. He's my friend.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brad D. Ray Harada. Tabitha T. Tom N. Talia M. Betsy D. Haven't talked to my Betsy in a while. Rhiannon C. Corey K. Dev Nexon. Michelle A. Jeremy C. Brandy D. Mr. M. Eugene and Leah. Mel S. Christine S. Eric H.
This one goes out to Shane R. Andrew M. says he's real sorry. Oracle.
He read his Oracle and realized that Amanda R. and Kevin E. No.
It's Stephanie K. and Jammin' J. Leanne J. Luna R. Mike F. Stone H. Brian L. Jules M. Jessica B. Kyle F. Kaylee J. Brian A. Mary and Louise L.
Romeo the Band, Frank B, Jen T, Nikki L, here on 95.5. April RM. I wonder what RM stands for. April, right here, right meow.
I think that's it.
Randy S, Oral P, Rachel D, Melissa H, Nick W, Stephanie and Evan, or Steven. Charlene A, Don G. Jenny B, John, Jennifer R, Tina E, NG Tracy. Tasha S, Keith B, Anna M, Waffles. I just did a Zoom with all my top tiers last week, and it was awesome to see them. And I sent a picture to all of them, and it was a blast. So thank you, and thank you for listening today. And that's really all I got, Ryan.
That's it?
That's it.
Hey, cool sweater.
Yeah, it's sweetness. It's yeah. Walter Payton.
Yeah.
It's I like it. It's comfortable.
Yeah.
It's really comfortable. These sweatshirts are freaking comfortable.
Maybe they can sponsor.
Yeah, maybe. Brought to you by Comfortable Sweatshirts from Michael Rosenbaum in the Hollywood Hills of California.
I'm Ryan Tejas, and also the dogs are here.
The dogs are here.
They're making their presence known.
A little wave to the camera. Guys, thanks again, and be good to yourself.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.